Bhante, we can hear you. Can you hear me now, Bhante?
Now it's okay. Yes, Ari, now we can hear you. You may take the chance first.
Sorry, Bhante, we have not received any reports for this session, Bhante. Sorry.
Okay. So then we have one. Yes.
That's right, Bhante. When I first came here, I had the whole perception of myself, of an existence of a being called me. So with that, there was a huge faith I had, say in Buddhism, in the image of the Buddha on the statues. I had a huge faith and Shraddha. But with the advancement of meditation and realization of there's not exactly a being called me, it's just an aggregate of mind and body. There arose a question in me on who is actually practicing this faith, like who's having this Shraddha if a being called me isn't there. And also related to it, a question on the topic of Kama Chanda. So under Kama Chanda, I read about Kusala Chanda. So there was a question inside me. This faith I have, like I always like to do the Buddha Puja, the daily Vandana. I like to engage a lot in these meritorious activities. Is it just faith, or is there a Kusala Chanda arising in my mind? And if there is a Kusala Chanda, may I have your advice, Bhante, on what attitude should I have to reduce it or to go forward with it?
So it is related to multivariables, but I would like to handle it with the evolution of Shraddha. Faith has four levels. The very first one is called Amulika Shraddha, Pasada Shraddha. That means by the face value, which is not being tested, you have not verified. That is on the faith of the Buddha, the Buddhists, and on the faith of the Muhammad, on the Muslims. And the Brahma, the Hindus, but they have not seen it, they have not touched it, but they are utterly controlled and whole life is lived by. So it is not a verified faith. So the Buddha instead told to start the spiritual life, that faith is enough. That is called Pasada Saddha, Amulika Saddha, baseless. But when you are put into practice, it becomes Okappana Saddha. Partially you can feel. When I'm observing five, six, seven, eight breaths, what is happening? And how can I make you reinvest it? Whether to continue with this, or is this just forgetting about this world and going to another mystic worlds? So that you develop, and some people take it as more realistic, more under your very nose, and tangible. So that is what you call Hivya scientific. But the science is external, this is internal, and some people think that this is something verifiable. So that is what we do in Satipatthana also. We, irrespective of the Buddhist faith, we ask just do it and see. And then onward, it's an open issue. So when it is practicing, if you keep on practicing, Okappana Saddha, that means you are not looking at the river and looking at the swimming people. You climb down into the water to the safety level, and slowly, slowly, you are going in. So that Okappana Saddha is not completely based upon the beautiful statue of the Buddha. Not completely dependent upon the offering of the flowers and these, everything you can do mindfully. Just like the breath. So then Okappana Saddha become deep and deep, and it's a long story, and end up with the Adhikama Saddha. That means you verify certain areas, no faith necessary, it's a proven fact. That is called scientific side of the Buddhism, but science is extrovert, this is introvert. The both founded by Buddha. Introvert, extrovert, both. But extrovert scientists do not understand the Buddha, they do not respect the Buddha, they don't know Buddha as the founder of this present-day rational thinking. But we born Buddhists, we can see scientists, they are in a blind world. They are just following the Buddha, thinking their own innovation. We humbly, we know everything is stated by Buddha. They think they fools. They think they are innovation. Their things are patent recorded, given Nobel Prize and Magsaysay Prize. We give everything to the Buddha because we have verified Saddha. Once you become Adhikama Saddha, no proof, no argumenting. That's okay. But besides all our pasada saddha, okappana saddha, adhikama saddha, there's another saddha called agama saddha. That's what the Mahabodhisattva, he is not going to realize himself. He is accumulating merits for to become Buddha. And that has no limits. He developed determination power. He developed kind of a mind power. Even normal arahants cannot comprehend. He take eons. That is what highlighted in Mahayana. Till everyone become enlightened, I'll be a Mahabodhisattva. And in appeal, a lot of compassion. But Theravada says, the wisdom is important. You can be a Savaka Buddha, the disciple, Arahant, and still you can see the Mahabodhisattva is having so much of powers. And they are appeal like mystic levels. So therefore, Saddha is evolving. Theravada never talk about that. But within the Theravada, that is being discussed. Virya is evolving, Satya is evolving, Samadhi is evolving, Panya is evolving. Saddha, they wanted to keep us in a blind faith. That the religious masters are doing. They think, put some money into a charity box, then you go to Nibbana. They are the robbers, take everything for breaking precepts. We are responsible for that. All the lay people are responsible because they are the people giving petrol. They are the people giving fuel for monks to play fool. But instead, you have to give cooked rice. You have to give necessities rather than money. And then you can understand they can make you sit for prasada saddha. Sorry, the okappana saddha, that is the part lacking. After the Buddha Jayanti, in Sri Lanka, 50 years of that development, there's one Bush or something that has written a report. He says five aspects he observed, how this okappana saddha is now appearing. Contradictory thing or irony is monks are in the lowest level. Lay people with so much of questions and challenges, they have come up to a higher level. The many meditation masters are lay people. And females scoring and taking a mileage more than males. And the monks, they appear like the authority, but they don't know what does it mean by satya. So that is Tupti Suri. I being a monk, I see the whole panoramic view. And I am working with lay people. I got the highest support from the monks itself, not the Buddhist, all the other clergies also. That means I think I know the balance. What is the difference between prasada saddha and I'm not disturbing it. Until do all the pujas, but I simply say, do mindfully, do SMS, do it slowly, mindfully, silently. Then whether you are breathing or offering flowers, no problem. Whether you go to the church or whether you go to the Pallya, no problem. You have a place, even in the church. So that is the simple answer for you. The short answer for you is, saddha is evolving. You are talking about the lowest saddha, it's called amulika saddha, no roots. Prasada saddha, it is superficial. But instead, we are lucky in this our generation, we have something to do. That is kusala chanda, not just by preaching and praying and kind of thing. Breathe, walk, do mindfully, then you gain. Easily you can gain this okappana saddha and that will be your protection. So therefore, let that verifiable saddha to replace the prasada saddha, just superficial saddha. And that is a prime task of a young person, I would say. Okay, I would like to invite Sudhwamdhru to come out with a proposal as a theme for the discussion.
So the proposal is that we follow the chapter of octaves. It's called the Ataka Vaga, and this is in the Samyutta Nikaya.
Last time also you used Sutta Nipata.
Sorry, Sutta Nipata. And So this is a collection of fairly short suttas, and the first four of these suttas are broken into eight verses. So that's why this chapter is called the chapter of octaves. It's following on from the sutta that we actually just finished, the Dvaitana Nupassana Sutta. So it's a very deep and profound collection again of suttas from the early stages of the Buddha's dispensation, and poetic, but at the same time very deep and ranging and moral and spiritual and mystic. So they're not often again taught. They take time to go through, and I hope it will be a suitable topic for this rains retreat. So I'll just start to read from this. I'm using Bhikkhu Bodhi's translation, starting from page 291, so you can get a feel for what this Samyutta Nikaya is like, or Sutta Nipada is like. So it starts with the first sutta is on is called the Kama Sutta, which is on sensual pleasures. When a mortal desires sensual pleasure, if that succeeds for him, surely he is elated in mind, having gained what he desires. But when full of sensual desire, a person is aroused by desire, if those sensual pleasures decline, he is affected as if pierced by a dart. One who avoids sensual pleasures, like a serpent's head with the foot, being mindful, overcomes this attachment to the world. So maybe I'll just stop after these first three verses. So again, we can immediately hear in the tone of this sutta that this is a moral teaching. So in these days, we have people who cry about this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong, or they're blaming the politicians, or they're blaming media, or they're blaming all kinds of things. But the Buddha really points back that the real moral effort is internal to the person themselves, and it's their relationship with the world, and especially this this transaction and relationship with the world that we have around sensual pleasure. So sensual pleasures are anything that the senses basically enjoy or find pleasure in. And that doesn't mean it has to be pleasing, because for some person, something that's kind of could be violent or upsetting might be a pleasure to them. So it can be very particular to the person what is a pleasure for them as perceived through their senses. So their senses are the eyes, the ears, the nose, the smell, the taste, the tongue, the touch, and also the mental faculty, the thoughts, the sense doors of the mind. So if a person gets what they want, if that succeeds for him, surely he is elated in mind. So people are happy when they get what they want, having gained what he desires. But the Buddha points out the flaw in sense desires, and that is when we don't get what we want, if those sensual pleasures decline, he is affected as if pierced by a dart. So this is the problem with sensual pleasure, is that it can come and it can go, and it's subject to causes and conditions. And just because we want something doesn't mean we are going to get it, because that may not be an adequate cause and condition for us to get what we want. And similarly, we can also get what we don't want, meaning we don't like it, and we don't want it. So this is, it's the two sides of the same coin. And this, for me, was a challenge to understand initially. How can how can something that I like or I value, we were talking about Buddha statues just a minute ago. You know, it's nice to see a nice Buddha statue, but then if somebody destroys it, if some jihadis come in here and blow up the statue, are we particularly upset about this or not? So we're upset because, you know, these enemies have destroyed the beautiful Buddha statue, because our sensual pleasure was aroused in seeing the Buddha statue, and then when it was destroyed, we felt great sorrow and loss. Our sensual pleasure declined, and it pierced us like a dart in the heart. So this is the problem with existence as such, is that we are constantly developing and cultivating sensual pleasures, sensual desires. And then when we can't get these sensual pleasures and desires, or we feel that we're being blocked from getting these things, then we feel anger, we feel displeasure, we feel that we have been pierced by a dart. So it, more than just simply being a moral teaching, this is also a very profound teaching. If you search through your mind or go through your mind, if you reflect on your own personal history and your own personal experience, you will have seen this momentum where you wanted something, you strove to get it, you got it, you felt happy, and then you lost that thing. And you felt pierced by a dart. So this is a very profound mechanism in our existence. It is motivating our actions, our big, little, and small actions. And then also it's bending our mind. If you're sitting in meditation, you can see how the mind is bending towards the things that we want and bending away from the things that we don't want. So this movement of the mind towards and away, this swinging of the mind out and inversity or aversion away from, is a major disturbance to the mind, a major like a wind, like is blowing a leaf. It's causing the fluttering, and one sees that that in the end the problem is the mind blowing and moving around. You know, it's not necessarily the object itself. It's the subject, the person that sees the object, is the problem is in within my own heart. And what is, you know, the great, you know, liberation of the Buddha is how to liberate ourselves from these underlining forces of sense pleasure or sense aversion. Because as long as we seek pleasure in the senses, we will also find aversion. We will find displeasure in the senses. They come together. You can't avoid this. There is no only good sense pleasure without a tail, you know, a stinging tail, as the Buddha said, a serpent's head. You know, there's a serpent's head. So I suppose this is referring to, like, you should keep away from the head of a snake. You know, if at worst you pick up the snake by its tail. So being mindful, one overcomes attachment to the world. So this attachment to the world, like Bhavatana, is very important. I mean, like, this is the ultimate attachment. We're attached to our body, we're attached to where we're born, we're attached to our home, we're attached to our home, culture, food, all these things. And when those things are lost or when those things change, then we feel a displeasure. So this attachment is very, very profound, and it in Buddhist understanding, this is what in many ways brings us back to rebirth as well, this very profound attachment for the world. And it's a very difficult attachment to uproot. So we need to be very skilled in even just dialing down our desires for sensual pleasures. This doesn't mean that we are going to be cruel on ourselves or excessively ascetic, excessively like we can't destroy sense pleasure. We have to have insight. We have to have wisdom into the process, because there is a distinguishment to be made between needs and wants. So these sense pleasures become problematic when we start to want things more than our needs, and our needs are our basics. So it's not a sense pleasure to not meet our own needs. So that pain and that dart of pain that we get from not meeting our needs is true suffering. It is true pain. This sense pleasure is mostly found in going past that mark of having, you know, wanting more than we really need. But nevertheless, it's the only way out of this path of suffering is to learn mastery over our sensual pleasures. And so that means not indulging in them on the one hand, or not denying them on the other hand, and working very hard to develop a wisdom and a profound insight into the nature of sense desire itself. Okay, maybe Mahatero can add.
Yeah, the most important thing is that sense pleasure, once we earn, only you become a slave. As far as it is not earned, you are desperately waiting. You will find fault with the world and the unfortune and kind of thing. And once you win, you feel like you are the protector, you have to protect. Ultimately, you don't know, you have become a slave. So therefore, winning itself is a lost. So the Buddha, therefore, it says, after winning, to develop your skill, and if you can give up what you already won, that's a personality. Rajava Rattang Vijitam Pahaya. After winning the country, after conquering the country, you have to give it up. So that is never been taught in education. Education says you have to win and you have to record patent. And you have to get its authenticity. That's the worst thing, minuous thing. For example, all the books on the earth is with the right reserved. Except what the Buddha taught. That's the best book. All the books, nothing reported as right reserved, because there is a humanity. Other shits, they are knowing as the artificial intelligence, and that knowledge, this is belong to me, my blood group, and no one can copy it, and if it is so, I'll take necessary care. More you people understand, the more you become narrow-minded. So sex and the sensuous pleasure, therefore Sigmund Freud reduced his whole theory, whole human behavior can be explained through sex. Everything is sexual. And even the very young children, they have different ages, mouth age, anal age, and all the kind of, they are nothing but sex. And they are getting, coming and attracted to the mother and father also while they are in romantic love. Then only they conceived into that. That is another kind of a mystical idea. So therefore everything is sex. But the Buddha reduced it to sensuous pleasure, sense indulgence, hedonic. And those who are winning become the king, become the ruling party. They think they have to give constitutions to the suffering class. The worst example is America. And they kept away religion. But now again they have taken it. And billionaires make tax laws. Everyone must pay. For example, if you go to America and learn first jhana, and if you earn first jhana, you have to give tax for first jhana. It will come soon. But they are making the plan. Second jhana, little higher rate. But the tax, the bloody, dragons, they never pay tax. They become president and they become the billionaires, and they are giving next to zero. And they are very concerned about the other's tax. So that is the way the America is showing the this thing. They become the police to the present-day civilized world. But I don't know how long that can thrive. So, but in the sex Kama Sutta, it says, whenever you are winning, you assume you have powers over the losing people. And you interpret terms. And that is the history. All human history is winner's fallacy. It is not what happened. And that is what we are learning. But the Buddha asks you to be here and now. Don't worry about this, all the history and all the heroes. And you are a world conqueror as far as you are in the present moment. But the main threat is sex. Main threat is desire. So you have to sacrifice. That sacrification is you are doing not with full understanding. You are doing on experimental basis. And then you gain certain amount of immaterial pleasure or kind of a spiritual pleasure. Niramisha Pritya. And science says it is mystics. They won't talk about these things. It is not scientific. They are talking about materialistic pleasure. That is luxuries. That is how artificial intelligence is taken sales. And they are taken away. They are taking our mind also away. And a very, very pathetic thing is young children going to school are being poisoned with this kind of thing. And they are talking about the sexual abuse. But they are never talking about this technological abuse. They are not talking about this, the taken children for a ride. They have no control. So this is what the Buddha earlier, he told, there's a single factor binding you to the samsaric game. So our parents also promoting it, our teachers also promoting it, our religious masters also promoting it, thinking it's a gain. And Nidana Sutta, the Buddha says, whenever you have desire, you do pariyesana, research, and the worst thing happens whenever the pariyesana becomes successful. Then onward, you are taken for a ride. So imagine no scientific Nobel Prizes for the Asiatic people, never. No for the African people, never. They consider this as a shit. Everything is to the Western countries, and they have literature, they have the administrative power, they have the tax laws, and we are blindly following. No, it is impossible, because Buddha mentioned Kama Sutta, and considered as Attakavagga, as considered as the most philosophical teaching of the Tripitaka. Many Theravada also do not happy to accept it, but they are written in archaic language. And as Venerable tried to explain, it is talking about the morality. But soon it go beyond morality. The Western morality is theistic morality. What the Buddha is going to say, not atheist, not theist. So therefore this morality is a religious or not, is something different. That is what the Western countries are difficult to understand, but they are on the process of understanding mindfulness. Now they cry, please, please, please introduce moral shame and the moral fear, not the mere mindfulness. Mere mindfulness is becoming introvert, becoming self-centered, so therefore what is the answer? But the thing is, soon you become mindful. Whenever the mindfulness becomes connected with clear comprehension, this random act of kindness will happen. So therefore, first think about your success. Whatever you claim as me is the only thing suffering you. These are the only thing for the cause of suffering. That does not indicate if you are deprived of everything, you are enlightened. Not the blind people are enlightened, not the deaf people. But the thing is, after claiming, after achieving, after conquering, you must have the ability to give up. But that is not. Raga, karma is always abiding you, always binding you. And that is how, who run the world? Girls. That's the American super blow, super bowl. They are running the world. So males are fighting just to get the consent of a girl. So it's very famous in Sri Lankan politics. Very common in Western politics. Everything is end up with this one. And people don't talk about. So therefore sex, the sensuous pleasure, is becoming, it is amygdala, it's a brutal, it is kind of a reptilian. And that is how the reptilian mind is being, shape-shifting is being highly considered as presented in the conspiracy theorist. This is the big people. They have 2-3 lives changing. And they have the very famous life and boosted life and their real life. But the poor fellows, poor people, they don't have that kind of multiplicity. And for them, still the karma is there. So the best sutta, I would say, Sanyoga Vyoga Pariyaya Sutta in Anguttara Nikaya Attaka Nipata, the Buddha says how females develop in female characters and males are chasing behind male characters, and so much so males are like, happy to be with females, females are happy to be with males. So there's a feminist fighting and the cosmetics and beautification, and there are union, copulation, also thrillful. So Buddha says, what? There's no way of escape. They are attractive to each other. Their whole life is for that. Therefore, they don't like elderly people, because elderly people and the very young children, they don't have that. So the world is run by girls. And they are unison, also giving so much of pleasure. So no way out. So therefore, in the meditation, in the Namarupa Parichaya Jnana, Paccaya Parigraha Jnana, Sammasana Jnana, Udayabhyaya Jnana, these things are very, very dramatic. But Udayabhyaya become Balava Udayabhyaya, everything is arising and passing away, then there is a chance you can say, whatever you desired also passing away. Whenever you not desired, passing away is a happiness. So arising and passing away giving a relaxation, even though you are not enlightened, and that is threatening to the psychiatrically imbalanced people. It is threatening to the medically imbalanced people, so it's a bottleneck. It is somewhere you have to really understand before going to the correct view. So that is why when you go to meditation centers, there are a lot of fools, a lot of bad, mad people. Because when they are meditating, that Udayabhyaya Jnana, that rising and passing away knowledge, come quicker than what you think. And they don't know how to handle it. So karma, in this case, appear in a perverted way. So whenever they become overwhelmed, he or she become a burden to the meditation center, and the meditation master becomes short-lived with heart attacks. So therefore, that one has to be very wide, very morally sound in the center, and you have to tell your problem is due to meditation. Yes, success, but lack of morality. Have moral code, then there is a kind of a controlling, kind of a restraint, and balancing sila sikha and samadhi sikha is a very tricky, more than operating a very sophisticated machine. And when it is to the other psychology and the mind, very, very tricky, very, very questionable. So that's why Western countries, in the meditation centers, they are charging a lot. Because if a case happens, the master is responsible. I know that MBSR, they charge $550, and 8 weeks' time, they promise this much of results. If the results are not there, they can claim. So therefore, everything is money. So this karma, the Buddha says, everything reduced to money. If you use money, you use panchakarma. So therefore, don't use money, use utility values, sorry, utility material, then there is no much of transgression. So therefore, it is a lifelong experiment, very difficult to reduce to 1 hour discussion or a one talk. We are talking about the same thing. So therefore, be alert, be diligent. Whenever such a thing happen, share it with others so others may come and help you. But they are also not completely liberated people, but we can help each other. So that is why we have to learn and study about this Kama Sutta.
So continuing on the fourth verse, fields, land or bullion, cattle and horses, slaves and servants, women, relatives, when a person greedily longs for various sensual pleasures, even the weak overpower him, obstacles crush him, then suffering enters him, as water does a broken boat. So here again we can just see that the Buddha is elaborating the various gross kinds of sensual pleasures that would be, say, particular to his time. It was an agrarian society that the Buddha was living in 2,500 years ago. So if you had land and fields, and bullion here refers to gold or silver or some object of value, then cattle and horses were a great possession to have, great wealth. Again, to own slaves or servants, and women and relatives, all of these were the objects or targets of sensual pleasures. So you can also see that the human nature hasn't changed in 2,500 years, even if superficially technology and communications and all kinds of things have dramatically changed and improved in many ways. Nevertheless, people who own land and have, properties and assets, capital, all kinds of things are, they are perceived as wealthy in the ordinary sense of the word, and that they are the beneficiaries. They enjoy sense pleasures. However, the Buddha points out that one becomes corrupted by one's own sensual pleasures, because you, as long as you don't have mastery over this force of nature, this drive within the mind of beings, sensual beings, to obtain sensual pleasures and to avoid sensual pleasure loss. As long as you're subject to this force, then you are ultimately weak and will be overpowered. You will be overpowered by your sensual pleasure. This force, this kama, will overpower you. And obstacles will crush you. So these obstacles could be just simply the things that stop you from getting what you want, or they could be just simply the things that take away what you desire. Or it can just simply be, what goes around comes around. Your karma will ripen in due course. So because you've made compromised decisions or poor decisions, because you wanted to obtain some sensual object, then there is repercussions. So in this way, he's meaning that obstacles will eventually crush you. And then suffering enters that person. So you see that people run into misfortune. They run into poor consequences of their actions, or they reap those consequences in due time. So sometimes it takes time for karma to ripen. So we don't immediately see the relationship between our past actions and our present rewards. So just as like when I was a child, I remember planting a seed for a tree and then being quite impatient that the tree didn't grow up very quickly. And but I learned from this experience that it takes time for things to ripen, and we should be patient on the one hand, but on the other hand, we should be fearful that eventually things do ripen and we can forget the seed that caused that ripening to occur. And we welcome the fruit when it is a wealth and an abundance, but we cry when that seed or that seed cultivates into a fruit that's not so nice, as the Buddha called it, being pierced by a dart. So even the weak overpower him, obstacles crush him, then suffering enters him as water does a broken boat. So in this way, we sink. So this idea, again, of elevation, going up or down, according to our kamma, is a very important concept. And what goes around comes around. And good begets good, bad begets bad. You know, these are very important basic ideas to keep in mind. So, you know, if we are faced with difficulties, if we're faced with a difficult person or something like that, in Burma, I learned the expression, we donate our patience with that person. We donate our patience. I never thought of patience as being a dana, but it can be a dana. And we learn, the Burmese put a lot of emphasis on patience as a faculty. So they'll say things like, patience brings you to nibbana. So we need to understand that when the water is leaking in and our boat is sinking, then we really have to make extra effort to elevate ourselves, to bring things good again. So maybe I can...
Yeah, that the Burmese people, I also observe they are very patient. But the Rohingyan case, and now in the... when the army took over, they are not patient. They jump to the road and kill each other. They are kind of a patient layer, and beyond that, they are very virulent. So that patience is good for the economics, but by looking at, they are not so, because they are not enlightened. So therefore, we give that some countries we call Burma, we call the hermit nation, and that's good for the. But after a while, they burst. So therefore, we have to understand. And the most important thing is, whenever you become successful, you are more vulnerable. That is the idea of renunciation. Renunciation is closely related with moral shame and the moral fear. If you can't renounce after earning, you become a slave. And they, in the art, they never teach how to renounce. They consider it as against the grain. It's unsocial. And so the Pabbajja, going forth, is the Buddha says the highest way of getting rid of defilements. There are three such places you must remember, where you renounce, where you become sotapanna, where you become arahant. So this renunciation is the best answer for the karma, and therefore karma people consider as the renounced people as a rebellions, and the renounced people consider karma people as lowly people or very immature mind. But the world is run by karma people, and so they give a due respect to the renounced people. But renounced people also going to incline to the karma people, world leaders, he will ruin. So you have to keep them for the four requisites and mind your own business. Don't go for this kind of a social work. It is very difficult balance. It is not karma, not the sensuous pleasure or sexual pleasure, but it is also karma. So therefore, the social behavior, moral shame and the moral fear, and the renounce tendencies. So when I am about to renounce my whole family toll, what you are telling is just an ideology, impossible in this time. No. You can live as a good citizen, you have full qualifications, So you can live a good married life or whatever may be, household life. Why you are becoming so fanatic to renounce? I had no ammunition to tell at that time. But I knew the renouncement or the renunciation is going to give kind of a nibbana, kind of a liberation. And I still stand that. But I found some people renounce and still suffer. So therefore, I can't overgeneralize it. But the answer is there. The kama vitakka is replaced by nekkama vitakka. So kama vitakka is the bad type, and that is what I call artificial intelligence, kama vitakka. Oh, I would say wandering mind. And for them, the answer is, if possible, renounce. And after renouncing, then again you have obsessional kind of defilements and obsessional renounced kind of suffering. I mean, it is better than the household suffering. So therefore, this is Kama Sutta is basically for those who renounced. Attakavagga is for those who renounced. But no harm. Other people also can learn it, and there are some things you can learn. But the thing is, there is something you have to do. Not you can't learn swimming in the dry land. You have to get down. And your ship is leaking. I prepared two boats in Kaduela. Both of them are leaking. You can't put into water. Soon you put few minutes and you get sink. So by sinchana, by removing also impossible. I just try to put a polythene bag. I just wanted to give a fiberglass coating. Whatever it may be, fiberglass boat is better. So, Sincha Bhikkhu Vidhanavam, he says, hey monk, if your boat is heavy, remove it. If the water is there, remove water, then you can go to the other shore. But our two boats are still very difficult to cross to the other shore because they are leaking so much. Because badly we got the chainsaw. And we cut the boat rather than digging the boat. So the tasma jantu sadasato kamani parivajye. So therefore the person has to be mindful and get renounced. Te pahaya tare ogang navang sitvana paraguti. And after removal or renunciation, taken the water from the broken ship, broken boat, and with the effort, but not to just riding, just to go to the other shore. So therefore, the sinking boat is a very good example, and the Buddha says example is, you are putting too much of weight, and then sink is, boat is sinking, otherwise it can flow. Even it's a damage, it can flow. But when you climb in, water coming. So therefore, that is more than a fiberglass boat. The wooden boat is more according to the Dhamma. You have to dry it and still not to pleasure game, but to cross to the other shore. So therefore, these things are much applicable to mendicants. Either to full-time or half-part-time renounce people because they are not giving methodology how to renounce. But it is give a methodology for the already renounced people. But unlucky enough, this Attakavagga, no one select as a topic for Dhamma talk or a topic for discussion. So they are completely least tackled suttas in the Sutta Pitaka. So we have to thank Venerable Buddha Rakhita for selecting these suttas, and we have to add our limited examples and share it with others, do what is possible, and then only we can go to the refined parts. And throughout this sutta also is talking the mindfulness is the way. Even to the renounce and after the renouncement for the obsession and defilements also. So that virtually finished the sutta.
If there are no other remarks, or if anyone not wish to contribute.
I didn't read out the last verse which Dhamma Jiva has been talking about. Therefore, ever mindful, a person should avoid sensual pleasures. Having abandoned them, one can cross the flood. As by bailing out the boat, one can reach the far shore. So again, the Buddha describes often this image of the near shore and the far shore, and this idea about crossing a flood, about a sinking boat, and how we can bail out the boat. These images or these ideas are found throughout the Sutta collection. So you can kind of almost say, it's a beautiful description of that time and place in India, obviously around the Ganges River. The river was the main way a very important way of transport, of movement in that region. It was probably more forested than it is nowadays. And so this idea of a river and a flooding of a river was very important in agrarian society. It wasn't a time of these mass irrigation or where you could easily move on roads. You had to move by boat at times on the rivers. And so this idea of crossing a flood, or the flood is the flood of sense desires, and also going from the near shore to the far shore is like going from the human existence and sense pleasures to the far shore of being free from the power of sense pleasures. And the word here is avoid sense pleasures, but again, it is avoid with wisdom. It isn't avoidance by covering over, avoidance by denial, avoidance by anorexia. This is a kind of an avoidance through mastery, through management, through wisdom. So in this way, we need to be ever mindful. It's a dynamic process, because any object of sense desire, we need to mindfully tackle it as it arises and distinguish between our needs and our wants. And as Venerable Dhamma Jiva mentioned, we need to be bailing out the boat, not cutting it in half with a chainsaw to improve
bailing
it.
Bailing out means removing water?
Bailing out means with a bucket you empty out the water instead of like you with the chainsaw cutting your way through the boat.
Cutting is the foolishness. Bailing out, you see, if the bank is removed, government bailed out the bank.
Oh, there was the government's fault for the banks. If the near bank and the far bank
The money bank. This not is our bailing
own
fault. Out.
You need to own up to your own responsibility. You're on the near shore and you're looking at the far
the
shore.
The near shore is Satyabhadla.
It isn't anything to do with the government.
The shore is the bungalow. And we are always either swimming or crossing these things. So Satyabhasali gave a classic example. I am learning the bailing out. I was thinking about what does it mean by bailing out.
Bailing out is like with a bucket you empty the water out of the boat.
But there so in socially the they say the bank is bankrupt.
They use the same metaphor, bailing out the bank, because it's sunk.
Yeah.
When the bank sinks, you bail it out.
Yeah.
Like a boat.
Thank you. So that is the end of the today's discussion.
You don't take a chainsaw to it like you do.
No, chainsaw is okay, but the user is bad. That is the. So thank you very much for the selecting the sutta. Thank you very much for the participation. So we are going to wind up the today's session. And
sorry, I'll just mention that next week we'll start on the octet on the cave.
Next sutta. So that's the end of the session. Thank you very much for the participation. Sadhu. Sadhu, sadhu.